Gentlemen, thank you so much for talking to me today. I will start with the traditional greeting. May the fourth be with you.
And also with you.
Thank you. Well done. That only took two takes. That was great.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 439, May the 4th.
I will confess right out that when it comes to stars, I prefer Trek to Wars. So here on Star Wars Day, I find myself a bit at a loss, so which is why I have wrangled two of my favorite theatrical Star Wars nerds, our old friend, arts advocate Howard Sherman. Hello, Howard.
Hello, Austin.
And my old but good new friend, podcaster and writer David Lore. David, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Jason. I've been looking forward to talking Ultron all weekend.
No, Dave, this isn't the
Incomparable?
This is not the Incomparable podcast. This is the far less well-listened-to Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Yes. Live long and prosper.
Yes. Very, very good. Okay, very good. Now we are caught up. Okay. So before we launch into the Marvel Universe, which I suspect is its own episode, tell me about Star Wars, either one of you, and why I should abandon my fondness for Star Trek for Star Wars.
Oh, I would not advocate abandoning your fondness for Star Trek at all.
Good.
I think it's a vast universe, as we've learned, and the fact is, as somebody who exists at the intersection of geek and nerd, I think there's room for a lot of affection for a lot of stories in these genres. So it's not one or the other. We're inclusive.
In Idic, right? Infinite diversity, infinite combinations.
That's right.
And the fact is, and in the multiverse, you are a Star Wars fan somewhere.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Well, yes, I mean, and maybe at some point in this conversation, Howard, we can get away from our shared passion for Star Wars and get into your fixation on Cupcake Wars, but that's a different thing. Am I right?
There's a lot of battles to be fought, and I'm just the guy to do it.
Awesome.
Don't get cocky, kid.
But David, you legitimately do have this. You are not at the intersection of geek and nerd. You're sort of right up at the top of the pyramid of, you know, tell me, how does Star Wars fit into your geek pantheon? Because I know, for instance, I saw you tweet that you have no interest or fondness for Game of Thrones. So,
yes.
And so that's a hole in your geek cred, I suppose. How is Star Wars the pinnacle?
It's not. No.
That's good.
No. I'm a Trek fan. I mean, that's always been the thing, you know. It's like you have some marriages of different religions or different races. We were a Star Trek fan and a Star Wars fan. And my wife kind of lost her interest in Star Wars somewhere in 1999, but definitely around 2003. There were rumored additional movies, but I don't know about that.
I think those rumored movies actually appeared, but many people have chosen to ignore them.
No. But I am looking forward to the first new good Star Wars movie since 1983. So there is that.
Well, that's the thing. The trailer came out for the new J.J. Abrams, not reboot, but continuation of the Star Wars saga. And I am not, as I said, not a Star Wars fan, but I have to say, I got the warm fuzzies seeing Han Solo and Chewie there. There was something very rich and emotional there. So I think for me, it's the characters of Star Trek appeal to me more than the characters of Star Wars. wars.
I think the fact of the matter is our relationship to all of these stories has to do with when we first came on them and how they were introduced to us. And I think that's true, whether it's theater or movies or books or what have you. Mm-hmm. I was 15 years old in 1977. When Star Wars came out, it was the biggest deal in the world. I saw it a number of times. It also became, interestingly enough, when my friends and I wanted to go to R-rated films and not tell our parents, mm-hmm. we informed them we were seeing Star Wars again. So in fact, some of my friends' parents are of the belief that we saw Star Wars a great many times, when in fact we were probably seeing Kentucky Fried Movie for the third time.
I was going to say, or Cruising with Al Pacino.
Wasn't on our list at that point, but you know, there is this great thing about Star Wars that, especially when you're a 15-year-old boy in the suburbs, and a story comes to you that does begin a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it is simultaneously science fiction and fairy tale bound up in one at a point when you can still genuinely accept that. I wonder if in our age of irony now, people would accept such a bold attempt to bind the future and the stories of our childhood.
That's very interesting. Yes, there is something there's something timeless about the way he constructed it. I guess yesterday on Twitter there was the hashtag trending of fake Star Wars facts. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites was Michael McKean of Better Call Saul and Spinal Tap fame, who tweeted that it was actually in the future and quite close, really. one of the things that's hugely valuable to what we do with the Reduced Shakespeare Company is that, well, it's true for Star Trek too, Star Trek and Star Wars, it's an international language. You know, even when we play China like we did last fall, the Wujian Festival, you can make a Star Wars reference, May the Force Be With You, or whatever it is, or Do or Do Not, There Is No Try, and even if it's translated into Chinese, everybody knows what you're talking about, no matter where you are in the world.
And do you think that's true for Star Trek?
Yes, if you do the Vulcan V and Live Long and Prosper, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it would be for, you know, Next Generation so much or the later ones, but I think the original one has been around so long.
Yeah.
And it's iconic and maybe it's not to Star Wars level now, but I would say probably, you know, you can show a blue police box. We know what that is. You can show the Vulcan salute or the Enterprise or Beam Me Up, Scotty. Yeah. We know what it is.
Yeah. And Howard, I think you hit on something too, the fairy tale aspect of Star Wars. That seems to be the thing that draws people into Star Wars in a way that I think Star Trek doesn't. Star Trek doesn't quite have that that feel of ancient fable that Star Wars does. It feels like Star Wars has always been around where it feels like Star Trek was created for us. Does that make sense?
Well, I think Star Trek was intellect and Star Wars is heart, at least the first three.
Yeah.
I mean, Star Trek had a particular mission. It was a mission of peace. It was a mission of exploration. It was a mission of understanding. Star Wars is at least the first three movies, which we acknowledge, are an adventure, and it's a young man finding himself. So there's something very interesting. And what's great about both of these universes, as you say, is how they've penetrated. So even people who are geeks, I mean, I would love to do, you know, 15 minutes with you on, say, Silent Running, but, you know, yeah, I would be met with blank stares, you know, if I had that conversation with most people. You know, the fact that there is a science fiction film with a Joan Baez score is something that needs to be explored, but clearly it's not going to have the resonance that these films and in the case of Star Trek, the TV series, have had.
Those were the droids we were looking for.
well, I mean, I always make the difference that Star Wars is a big, giant saga, right? It's one big story. It's a chosen one as your protagonist. It's you know, all the Joseph Campbell stuff. Whereas Star Trek is the Odyssey. It's individual stories that happen to have these same characters in them, but they're traveling, and it's always a little bit different. And that's one of the things that's bugged me about the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies, is that he's trying to retrofit it to where Jim Kirk is the chosen one. I mean, he just sort of fails upwards through both of these movies because he's Jim Kirk, and then he comes back to life because he's Jim Kirk. And I mean, it's just, stop it. He has said he is a Star Wars fan. No wonder he jumped ship and went to direct the new Star Wars movie. Yes. And it's like, I didn't watch Star Trek, but I'll direct two movies of it.
I like all the literary antecedents there, and it brings me back to a question I've had a lot, and I'm glad to be able to ask you guys, is the theater handles so many genres so well, musical, comedy, tragedy. Theater does not do science fiction well. Why do you think that is, and is there a way we can change that?
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
Let us start from that premise.
Let me count the way. I'll let you count the way.
I think first of all, there is more and more of a movement towards science fiction theater as people are coming of age as writers who did grow up with Star Wars and Star Trek and so much more science fiction on TV. But there's actually an enormous amount of science fiction woven through theater. However, because of the perhaps elitism that attaches to theater, they tend to avoid wanting to call it science fiction. There was just a play here in New York, also in the West End, called The Nether, which was about a future society in which you literally plug in your consciousness to the internet and can go to created spaces that would be otherwise non-existent. There's a brilliant play, one of my favorite plays, which has no special effects, no nothing. I've seen it performed, one case with nothing but a sofa on stage, and another production, nothing but two chairs. It's a play called A Number by Carol Churchill, the British playwright.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I would be diminishing it to say that it is a play about cloning. But it is a play about the moral and ethical ramifications of cloning. Now, I'm just naming two examples, and David, maybe you want to jump in. I think the problem, though, is that the idea that theater must aspire to something higher and that science fiction and fantasy are somehow low genres requires people to avoid the label, even though they're being written. My friend Alan Ayckbourn has written multiple science fiction plays, and he's actually not really all that shy about it. But robots figure prominently in several of his most famous plays, and he did a very, very moving play about time travel just a couple of years ago.
Well, and you could argue, it wouldn't take much to argue that Rocky Horror Picture Show is maybe the most popular successful example.
Yeah, Return to the Forbidden Planet.
Yep, yep.
I mean, I'm just like 4 feet away from me. I would reach it if I could, but I have a book here called Geek Theater, which is a collection of science fiction plays. You know, you have playwrights like Mac Rogers and Gus Schulenberg and Callie Kimball who are writing things that are not set in this reality. And it's really exciting. I mean, it's something I like playing with. And I know from falling into the Incomparable podcast series, which is, you know, mostly about science fiction and pop culture and all that kind of stuff, getting feedback from listeners who had never thought about going to plays. But now they hear a playwright talking about all of these geeky things, too, and go, hey, that guy knows things that I know. That's cool. And you know, one of the things I always do is, you know, it's go to plays. And so in the last 2 years, I've had tons of listeners writing back saying, thank you for making it safe to go try this. You know, and it's like, well, it's just fiction. It's a different place. It's not your couch, you know.
Exactly right. Well, anything that gets people going more to the theater is okay by me.
Hi, I'm Shannon Cochran, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This week, our 82-city UK and Ireland tour of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged concludes with its final performances in Wakefield, Doncaster, Westacre and Norfolk, Leeds, Barnstable, Blackwood, Chipping Norton, Pershore, Hounslow, Basingstoke, Guildford, Tenterden, Banbury, Wandsworth, Derby, Bolton, Wolverhampton, Worcester, Dumfries, Stranraer, Oxford and Wellingborough. Then from June 10th to July 10th, we'll do a reduced UK tour of the show that started it all, The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Howard Sherman and David Lohr about Star Wars and the power of epics and sagas and, as Howard is about to elaborate, the pull and magic of all kinds of theaters.
As much as I love live theater, I love movie theaters too. And the thing about Star Wars or Star Trek, and we're certainly going to see it when the new Star Wars opens, however it's received, people are just going to swarm movie theaters. And there is something very fundamental about the experience of watching films on a big screen in a room filled with other people that you simply cannot replace on your home TV, unless you are vastly wealthy and unless you have a couch that seats several hundred.
You guys have inspired me. I am now going to go watch all these movies on my phone.
Well, just, you know, to come back to it again. Oh, yeah, great. Is it, yeah, Lawrence of Arabia is also really good small. Do that one. No, but, you know, you have to go back to the idea that also Star Wars and Star Trek both come from an era when there were fewer entertainment options. And when Star Wars became, for a time, you know, one of the biggest box office successes of all time, you know, at a point when ticket prices were so much lower, it's extraordinary the number of people who saw it and have it as a common language. Star Trek, even though as a television series, the original series was not the highest rated show, you only had three networks. So even low rated stuff was being seen by millions upon millions of people. And these works have become the common language for people, certainly, Austin, for people of my generation and yours, the vast majority of people have been exposed to them. David's precocious. He's a little bit younger, but he's caught up with them later on. But these are our common stories the way a Charles Dickens story would have been a common story, you know, 150 years earlier.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember a time in my life when I didn't have Star Trek. And, I mean, I'm about 8 or 9 years younger than Howard, I know. And so I think I must have been three when I got the playset, right? The Enterprise playset.
Well, the original series was off the air before you were born, David.
Yeah, this was totally syndication, and the animated show was running, so I know I watched that. But I would watch the rerun of the original every day at 5 o'clock on Channel 44, Tampa Bay, St. Pete, WTOG. I mean, it's stuck in my head. But I don't remember a time when I didn't have Star Trek. But I remember a time when there was no such thing as Star Wars.
Remember, one of the amazing things about Star Wars, and one of the things that made George Lucas such a fabulously wealthy individual, is he asked for to keep the merchandising rights on Star Wars. And at the time...
And Fox gave it to him.
they gave it to him because there was no perception that it was really something of any great value. And of course, it turned out to be one of the greatest business decisions in entertainment history, probably. But again, none of that would have worked if the stories didn't fundamentally connect. And, you know, for all the people who want to see what Adam Driver is going to be like in the new movies and so on, you know, I think for a lot of us who've been living with these stories for much of our life, we want to just see Han and Chewie and Luke and Leia again. They're old friends, and I can only liken it, going back to Star Trek, when I saw Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, and by now I assume people know the story, so this is not a spoiler. When Spock died, it was a deeply and profoundly upsetting experience because of the amount of time, the amount of my life that I had spent with that character. And interestingly, when Leonard Nimoy passed a few months ago, it recapitulated that experience because he was so associated with the character. Star Wars, Star Trek have gotten under our skin and into our culture in a way that, frankly, it's very difficult for a play to do because plays don't have sequels. Plays don't have trilogies, usually. And so you only have 2.5 hours, more or less, in which to enter that world. These worlds allow us to live in them.
Well, and that's another way in which your friend Alan Ayckbourn has blazed trails in terms of sequels and trilogies.
Right. Well, the play is going to be different everywhere you go. You know, I may love the character of Prospero, but the version I see in D.C. is going to be different from the one I see in New York, is going to be different from the one I see in Denver, and they may be all good, but maybe I really like the New York one, and the other two, not that great. Yeah.
But it's interesting, but I'll go back to Churchill's A Number and say that I've seen it several times, and every interpretation is valid and wonderful and engaging. And I said to my wife after we saw a production in London a few years ago, I will go see a credible production of this play anywhere it's done for the rest of my life because I want to keep exploring that play because, frankly, it's so deep, I'm not going to probably ever get it all.
Oh, yeah. We thought about producing it a long time ago, and I don't know if you've ever looked at the script, but it took me a long time to get through it. Because it is not punctuated or laid out in any
normal,
rational. I mean, it is really difficult.
One play where she doesn't even indicate which characters speak.
Right, right.
You just decide.
And so that must make it really interesting also to see different interpretations of it because they're going to have different punctuation stops. They're going to have different, you know, it's going to be a little different every time.
In the future, there will be no punctuation.
Well,
goodbye, Oxford comma.
That's right. And James Joyce will rule.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us the droid you're looking for via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Padawan Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Beth Burns. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Howard and David for Skyping with me this morning on such last minute notice. A special thanks also to Shannon Cochran, a Star Trek veteran herself, who I saw last night play Regina in The Little Foxes at the Goodman Theater here in Chicago. It opens this week, and she was fierce. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 439/1317 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
If you are interested in science fiction and silliness and radio theater, you can find us at the Incomparable Radio Theater online, coming up with new episodes coming very soon. It's just theincomparable.com.
And if you want to find me in decidedly more serious tones, you can find my work on HESherman.com.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.